From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 416, streaming large-scale live events with guest Ian Philpott. Recorded Monday, April 6th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Ian Philpott, who's a premier field engineer at Microsoft and specializes in Azure deployment and migrations. For the past couple of years, he's been working with the Azure Media Product Group, helping ensure their customers' live events go off without a hitch. And Ian has been involved with such events as the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, 2014 FIFA World Cup, and most recently, the latest Super Bowl. What was that, 59?
49,
yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't think about Azure this way, about the live side of things like this. At least I don't anyway. It's kind of a real specialized area.
It is. It is. It was an area that, you know, going into it, I did not have a whole lot of insight on.
Mm-hmm.
I was sat down in a room with a bunch of guys a lot smarter than I was for a few weeks before I really got a good handle on the entire system and how it works.
And we're talking about getting the Super Bowl, the Olympics, the World Cup out to mobile devices, not just televisions, right, but to everything.
Yeah, so we, for that, Azure Media Services focused solely on broadcasting these events to the internet, to any platform.
Right, so it's got to work on everything.
Exactly, yeah. So we had web, iOS, Android, and of course, Windows apps as well.
Right, right. So, and I've done web performance stuff in the past and certainly run into lots of folks who simply look at this and go, this is what content delivery networks are for, right? This can't be hard. You just call up the Akamai's of the world and they do it for you.
Yeah, I wish it was just that easy.
I'm just Akamai. Softballing you here, man. I've had my butt handed to me by CDN so many times I can't tell you.
No, Akamai has been great in that whole process. They were definitely the CDN that we used or that NBC used for all of this.
I mean, you are talking about some of the largest events in the world. And for better or worse, they're one of the originals and certainly one of the largest and priced accordingly.
Exactly. I think during the Super Bowl, we were sitting around in a war room and we had representatives from Adobe, Akamai, NBC, everybody in this room.
Right.
So we were getting real-time telemetry from all of these different systems. And some of the stats coming out of Akamai, I don't think it was the largest ever to go over their network, but it was certainly in the top five.
Wow. Yeah. This is sort of a unicorn scenario. But I think if you guys can do this, then any web stream I need to do anything like that, certainly we know it's possible. It's just a question of understanding what it takes to do it.
Exactly.
So what are the roles involved here? Obviously, you're picking up the live broadcast at the event, and then it gets digitized. I mean, what happens after that?
So once we get kind of that feed coming in, it comes into one of our partners for these specific types of events, our partner called iStream Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they do most of the encoding, and or all of the encoding, rather, for the event. And then that is what we actually ingest into Azure Media Services. So it's encoded, you know, in the H.264 codec and all that. And then we take it in. And at that point, one of our main goals is to dynamically package it so that whatever type of device is requesting it, we have it in that correct format.
Because I can't imagine everything takes H.264, much less all the different bit rates that it might be at, right? I mean, it's got to depend on what your connectivity potential is. Do you just pre-encode it every format?
So actually, no, we don't. We take the ingest in the format that we get it. And then we lay it down in storage, Azure Blob storage. Mm-hmm. And then actually our origin server, or excuse me, they're now called streaming endpoints, actually on the fly dynamically package that. So that's one of the big differentiators between our competitors. Basically, we're storing one set of files on disk, mm-hmm. and then we, when the request comes in, we actually package it for that specific format and send it out.
Wow. So you store only like the highest resolution image, and then you are able to real time sort of scale it to whatever it needs to be?
Yeah. And that's the beauty of the system. That's what our guys up in Redmond have done so much great work on.
So is that's Azure Media Services that we're describing here, is the ability to take one set of encodes and pump it up to a bunch of other things.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's not a small thing you're talking about. And you do that, that's virtually real time per request, you're doing the transcoding?
Yeah. Yeah. I think during this whole process, I think we were between 30 and 60 seconds behind real time.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, that's a whole interesting conversation all by itself, especially talking about stuff like the Olympics, where people were tweeting out the wins, and no matter what you were watching, you saw the tweet before you saw the end.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just, I think, you know, that's going to happen, but...
That's just the weird new world we're living in today.
Exactly. You know, I was actually the encoding partner, iStream Planet. Mm-hmm. I was actually sitting in one of their locations out in Vegas during that time. And we'd made some jokes about getting the feed sooner than everybody else, you know.
So you could actually tweet stuff out if you wanted to be part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. All right. So, I mean, you've got the television infrastructure. I'll just start following the architectural path here. We could dig into the details. So we have the actual NBC feed going to iStream to do the higher res encode that goes to you. You store it. And then as requests come in from individual devices, or who's making the request to you?
So individual devices aren't actually making requests to Azure Media Services.
Right.
We put Akamai between us and the device. So the device calls a URL that says Akamai in it, basically.
Okay.
If you were to capture that traffic using a tool. And then Akamai edge servers are what's making requests to our origin servers.
Now, I've spent some time with Akamai. So what is it, 3,000 endpoints they've got around the world? Something like that.
I think you're right. Yeah,
yeah.
That sounds right.
So theoretically, you have 3,000 clients that are requesting any number of encodement types.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have, I don't know, do you know how many different encodement options you ended up supporting it in during an event like the Olympics?
So we supported three. One was the iOS encode type that
right.
Android also supports. The smooth streaming and
magical stuff.
Yeah. And then I believe we were also supporting Dash, but we didn't actually have any players using that. So,
but in the end, it means you were only needing to push out several thousand streams if every one of those endpoints was making requests, which, I mean, you talk about the Olympics or even bigger, I would think the World Cup would be the largest of that bunch worldwide. It's just unbelievable what the demand is.
Yeah. So during the Olympics, we actually not only supported, you know, the local NBC streams as well, but we also supported all of the streams worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, we keep thinking it's very easy for us living in places like US and Canada with pretty epic bandwidth and the West in general.
Mm-hmm.
The World Cup's much more a worldwide thing. Well, Olympics too. It's not always going to be a high bandwidth environment, but I guess that's largely Akamai's problem then.
Yeah, it is. We still had to do a lot of load testing and things like that
sure.
on our origin servers. And that's one of the nice things about the streaming endpoints. I kind of go back and forth. They were origin servers at the time. And we've since kind of renamed them, but to streaming endpoints. So these streaming endpoints do have the ability to scale just using the nice slider bar in the Azure interface.
Wow.
And you can scale up the streaming endpoint and Each one supports about 200 megabits per second.
Right.
Is kind of the cap there. And I think we were running 4 for each one of the, I think it was something like 24 channels that we had.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, for the Olympics, we came close to about 10,000, cores.
Wow.
For that. Yeah. So it was a pretty large scale, compute environment at the time.
Yeah, no question. That's a ton of compute. Were you using multiple Azure data centers? I mean, you guys are all over the world as well. Does that help you being closer that way?
Yes. Actually, there's a couple of outages that no one really even noticed. It wasn't really due to Azure. And luckily, it was kind of our evenings, but kind of at night in Sochi. So there wasn't much going on. Much streaming at the time.
Wow. So you had outages that never impacted performance.
Yeah, we were able to fail over. So we were using the East and West data centers.
Right.
We were able to seamlessly fail over between East to West. And no one ever noticed. There wasn't really any hiccup in any of the streaming. So it was a great story. I was impressed, kind of seeing that happen.
Isn't it fun when your own gear impresses you? It's like, wow, we pulled that off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and it's not like the Olympics are 24 hours a day either. Or were they for you effectively? Were you rebroadcasting so forth when you weren't live?
No, we ran, I think it was an 18-hour day, though we had shifts running 24 hours.
Right.
Because there was some things... some of the Olympics channels, you know, that they play in the village and stuff there that we were handling as well.
Oh, really? So not just feed out to the world, but feed within the Olympic environment itself.
Mm, yeah.
That's cool stuff. So what was your role being there?
So my specific role, I was on the team of PFEs. We were kind of asked to come in and work on the telemetry systems mm-hmm. for the feeds. As it stands now, still, Azure Media Services is sort of a black box where you ingest a feed and then you get video on the other side. So we were working with the product group on some kind of internal telemetry systems that were, you know, kind of doing a proof of concept to eventually roll out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching feeds. And looking for, you know, all the HTTP error codes that could happen coming off of the Akamai Edge servers requests to our streaming endpoints. And then I was also working with some of the developers, testing specifically their different applications using Fiddler and things like that.
Sure.
To kind of increase that. So it was a really neat experience just kind of seeing the whole gambit coming in from a raw feed all the way down to the player on the device.
And we've had we've done a few shows along this area about these large scale events over the years. Are you getting to a stable state? Is this now a kit, or is every one of these events a different thing?
And that's a great question. And that's kind of one of those things that I wanted to point out, you know, to our customers when I first start talking to them that, you know, Azure Media Services technically isn't a complete PaaS offering where you can do all of the content management in a web interface or something of that nature.
Right.
That's kind of the piece that Azure Media Services doesn't have at the moment. And so customers sometimes are a little bit confused by that. This is really kind of a programming interface to encoders and media distribution system.
Right.
That you can then build your CMS on top of.
So there's no, I want to run a worldwide event button, insert your credit card number here option, you know?
No, no.
Not, but it'd be cool if there was.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
I mean, the Super Bowl's every year. Mm-hmm. Olympics every other year, if you take summer and winter together. Like, you're running 3 or 4 of these a year, aren't you?
Yeah, so we've got a few, you know, large tier events that happen every year. And, you know, there's a lot of work going into making sure that it's going to go off without a hitch prior to it. But we also have customers right now that are coming to us that just want to do, you know, corporate meetings, their town hall meetings and things. And for our premier customers, we're definitely kind of building out, you know, a 1 to 2 day type of engagement where we kind of come in and help them get through the whole entire process, with a couple of different partners that we're using.
That's cool. And it's interesting to see that. I mean, clearly it's maturing, that more of these pieces run consistently all the time. It's just a question of what the perfect solution is. And of course, the network itself keeps evolving, right? The internet's not exactly a static thing. Mm-hmm. So how you plug stuff together keeps changing as well. I haven't asked this so far. Maybe I should. Just what is on the client side? What actually does somebody have to put something on the phone?
So that's a good question, and it's certainly not my area of expertise. We definitely relied on a lot of our third-party partners to help build these. But just kind of simply put, there is specific players to specific devices.
Right.
And you really want to and have to account for each one of those when you're starting to think about, okay, I want to go out and put this on every device type.
Right.
The best solution right now, of course, is going with an app that integrates their player into it. Mm-hmm. We used, I believe, Adobe's Primetime Player, and the guys over at Realize helped do that. They
And this is there's a paywall here, right? Like these are pay-per-view things.
Yes. And then Adobe, particularly Adobe, had actually provided, you know, the authentication stream so that you had to log in with your cable provider authentication. And then the Super Bowl, we actually, our NBC had made the decision to go ahead and just open it up and have no paywall.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah. And we were, I think, able to break a few records there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's a record look like in these scenarios? I mean, we've been talking about these massive worldwide events for many years. I just can't imagine what those numbers are.
I think for the Super Bowl specifically, we had 2.5 million unique users. And I think it came out to be like 1.3 million concurrent users at any given time. So it was the largest event for the Super Bowl, not the largest online event.
Sure.
But still pretty impressive scale.
No, it's an amazing number of people for what is really an American event, for better or worse, right? I mean, it's a kind of – it's a game that's pretty much only played on one continent, and yet it has an incredible draw.
Exactly. We did have – you know, there's what the VPNs people can use to kind of VPN into the U.S. to gain access.
Yeah, who knows? You're exactly right.
But, you know, they actually identified a lot of that kind of traffic.
Oh, interesting. They recognize the proxies. Hey, Ian, give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alerts you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at ScriptRock.com/RUNASRADIO. Okay, so it seems like you guys are just sort of sitting in the middle of all of this, taking in this real hardcore stream and then pushing it out in multiple formats. Is there other pieces to that? I mean, we're talking about a worldwide thing, right? How do you deal with – there must be many more streams in that, right? Like when you talk about the World Cup especially, how many different languages is each game coming out as?
So, yeah, when you talk about the World Cup it's coming in from multiple broadcasters typically.
Sure.
And for that one particularly, there's a single encoding partner outside of the US that takes in those feeds, each one of those feeds, and then they ingest that into AMS. So we have multiple subscriptions typically going in that scenario,
right,
with multiple channels. A channel is kind of can relate to just a single stream, basically, in AMS. And
NBC's a worldwide company too, right? Like they're not only dealing in English and say Spanish, it's many languages.
So with NBC, you know, it's all about the broadcast rights that they get. So, you know, that's really far out of my area, I think,
right,
on that one, where they can and can't broadcast to.
Right.
And
of course, that's the other whole thing you get into, blackout regions, what they're allowed to show, what they're not allowed to show. Yeah, that's
what
really
device types they're allowed to show on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this must get pretty granular. So per country?
Yeah, you've got per country, per device type. For the Super Bowl, we had web as well as tablet.
Right.
But we did not have cell phones.
Interesting. That's an interesting choice. And you still had those catastrophically vast numbers while leaving the most populous device in the world out.
Exactly. It was really...
What would it have been if they'd allowed phones?
That's a good question. The people doing the phones, I did not see their numbers.
Right.
So I could... But I'm sure we could probably correlate some numbers there and figure that one out.
That's fascinating stuff. And I'm just going to... We're not even going to debate why. Because we're IT people. They just tell us what the rules are. We just have to obey them. But
yeah, exactly.
Somewhere in between the player and the CDN has got to be this decision of whether or not you push the feed through to that device or send them an unhappy message.
Yeah, I was trying to think. Basically, typically the app knows what type of device it's running on.
Right.
So that's kind of where I think a lot of that logic was at.
Sort of save the callback. She's like, yeah, we're not going to get there. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not 100% sure on that. And that was, but I believe that's where that logic mm-hmm. had played, you know, was put in.
What, and the whole paywall processing stuff, so forth, did you deal with any of that?
I did not.
You're better off.
Yeah. I did. Identify, or the team did identify a few times that was the problem.
Right. That they could not process transactions for those devices.
Exactly. And we had, you know, a bunch of people on, you know, calls and things like that when we're working through these types of problems. And a lot of times, you know, the finger does get pointed at Microsoft.
Sure. I'm not going to say anything bad about any of these companies, but I think you're the most visible brand in that tool chain.
Right.
Most people don't know who iStream Planet is.
Yeah. And, you know, working with the product group, they gave us such a robust telemetry tool set mm-hmm. that we were able to very quickly identify, you know, if it was problem coming in on ingest, if we were having the problem,
right,
or if it was a problem after it's kind of left us.
Well, you are sitting in the middle here. Like, are you getting the data in from the source, and are you able to stream fast enough to the CDNs making the requests?
Yeah, exactly. So rightfully so, we were kind of the middleman, like mm-hmm. you said. So a lot of fingers kind of got pointed at us, and you know, we were always happy to help. Let's dig in and find out.
And you're doing the classic prayer during a live event. Oh, Lord, do not let me screw this up.
Yes, we had many people sitting in the war rooms for each of these events all across the country. I think at one point we had around 23 people kind of going on 24-hour shifts. And but luckily, you know, everything went off without a hitch.
Yeah. Pretty much. And even when there was stuff broken, you were able to bypass it in a way that people don't see. That's what you hope for.
Yeah.
It's easy when everything goes right. It's how well you deal with when things don't go right that sort of gives you the measure of a system.
Mm-hmm. And then I think the other piece, the kind of the understated piece of all of that was, you know, even the VOD systems coming into this
right.
Behind live. Once the live event's over and they want to do replays and things like that. So we did and still do manage a lot of that.
Wow.
Content. And I believe we were in the, about 100 terabytes of data stored in blob storage that, was used for different replays from the Olympics. So that was just the Olympics, I believe.
Yeah. So all of the newscasts all over the world talking about the Olympics, would they be still taking video from you to make up their casts, or is it just voice or just video on demand related stuff?
This was mostly just event replays within the apps and on the website. We did do a lot of that work as well, in taking in that feed. And then we actually sent that feed off to a couple of other third parties, as well as NBC themselves. And that was kind of a workflow that I didn't have much part.
Right. But it sounds like you sort of had the copy of record living in AMS for all of these events.
Yeah, to an extent. I think for certain workflows, we definitely do.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting part of the equation. And, you know, this is only going to get weirder now. You know, we all are aware there's many more cameras. I remember talking, I'm not even sure who it was, back in the 2010 Olympics times, where they were talking about, with the right player, you were able to shift your view of the game or of the event in real time, or watch several different ones simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I just wonder how we're going to get to more and more of that, to really breaking out of, you know, so far what we've described is just taking television and pushing it out to more devices. How do we turn it into that more interactive experience?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity in that arena, going with the multi-camera angles.
Yeah.
I know there's work being done. I think we did some of that testing for the Super Bowl. And I do believe we did use some multi-camera feeds for the Super Bowl, but not a lot of user interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Capability at this point.
You're getting down to a device now that can send signals back.
Right.
You could be picking a view. You could be asking for a replay. You could be doing a lot of things, just changing the experience entirely.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting aspect to this that we're definitely looking at, mm-hmm. I would say.
It just keeps on going. So what's the next big event?
What is the next big event? I know a lot of folks are starting to talk about Rio.
Right. Of course, the Summer Olympics. That's 2016. We're doing this in April of 2015. It's got to be another. I mean, the Super Bowl's already gone by. You lived through that. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there must be something else this year. But yeah, Rio in the summer of 2016 has got to be, well, one of the largest sporting events all time.
Yeah. So, you know, I think some of a lot of times these bigger events are kind of up in the air until we start getting a little bit closer to time. As far as what the big events are now coming up, I think, I'm not completely sure.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of the normal daily activities at this point on the live broadcast team. So,
well, it's interesting to see someone like yourself, like a premier field engineer involved in this, because normally, you know, who's the premier customer here that the PFVs are tied to? Is it NBC?
We were tied to the product group.
Oh, okay.
Actually. So it's kind of an incubation type of internal at Microsoft. And they reached out to PFEs to kind of that was the talent pool they pulled in. So.
Well, PFEs are some of my favorite people to bring on Run As Radio, because you guys are out in the field doing real work. You know, you have a very particular viewpoint that I think the audience appreciates. So it's exciting for me personally to hear that Microsoft recognizes that and asks you guys to work on their own projects too.
Yep. Yeah. That was, it's definitely not unheard of, mm-hmm. Within PFE for us to kind of come in and work on internal projects. And, you know, I was excited to be able to take part and be on the team that did. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really, got to be a really cool gig. What do you do in the in-between times? I got to imagine they don't just stick you on the shelf.
So I personally have been helping with other customers doing kind of town hall events, things like that.
Still streaming events, just not quite at the same scale. And again, it's exactly. Like, I think we opened the show with this. Hey, here's a unicorn. Here's this extreme event. So, you know, your event will go off. I mean, you could have a fairly decent sized company that's trying to do a, like you said, a town hall across many offices across the planet. AMS can be play a role in that.
Yeah, and you know, not only just with AMS, I've been helping other customers a lot more recently with just deploying and migrating different types of applications in Azure. We gained a lot of insight building a lot of different tooling running as, you know, everything from websites to worker roles and databases within Azure itself.
Right.
So, you know, I've been, you know, taking some of that insight as well out to customers and working with them.
So, and are we talking primarily about projects that you really need to scale that you bring over to Azure?
A lot of multi-tenant type of projects at the moment that I'm working with, where a SaaS provider, you know, software as a service provider, will have a customer come in, sign up through their registration process, and this registration process itself will actually deploy out their environment for that specific customer.
Yeah, nice.
Doing some work around that with a few different vendors, actually.
So the customer can just see their stuff, but it's all in a multi-tenant system. So you're only running one infrastructure for everybody. Well, I think that might be a whole other show, Ian. We probably should stop it there. I'm going to have too much fun and we'll be gone for another half an hour. Thanks so much for coming on. This is really cool stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I've always been a big fan of the show, so excited to be here.
Well, thanks. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.